A very good evening. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Special thanks to our host, Southeast Hebrew Congregation in Silver Spring, Maryland. Sukkah, Chavtes Amud Beis 29b, pagination, page 58, halfway down the page. The privilege of starting a new Mishnah, a new Perek, and a famous one at that. Lulav HaGazel VaHayovesh Posel, the Perek dealing with the Arba Minim, the four species on Sukkis. A lulav that was stolen or that is dried out is posel, is invalid for the mitzvah. So, Yovesh, how dry is a lulav that it's already considered not acceptable? So, the simple approach is that it loses its green appearance. There is another opinion, which is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, that it's so dry that you could flick it with your finger, and it cracks, it breaks. It's really, really dried out. But that's not the way we paskin, except that it's brought, because sometimes in some communities they couldn't access the Arba Minim, and they would have trouble with one or the other. Let's say a lulav one year was very hard to get, and they would use the lulav from last year, kol shelo nifrach b'tziporin, as long as it wasn't so dry that it would crack. So it's like it exists on the books to be aware of such a definition, but that's not really the definition that we work with. We work with that it should have greenness to it. Guzzle, which was the first case, stolen. So at first glance, the reason that guzzle stolen is no good is because you need shalochem. The pasuk says, ulakachtem lochem. You have to take what's yours. So on the first day of Sukkis, even borrowed is not going to work. And when we borrow from each other a lulav on first day Sukkis, we're actually doing matana manas lahachzir. We're asking the person to grant it to us as a gift on condition that we return it. And we're actually acquiring it, it's ours, and we do the mitzvah in that way. Guzzle, stolen, obviously it's not yours, you can't do the mitzvah. But the Gemara explains that it's much more than that. This is not just an issue of lachem. This is even the other days of Sukkot when you're allowed to borrow someone else's lulav, but guzzle wouldn't work because it's mitzvah baba avera. It's a mitzvah resulting from an improper activity, a sin, and therefore guzzle doesn't work. This is not just talking about the first day Sukkot. It just doesn't work. There could be a point, once something changes hands multiple times, there's a case where it's no longer traceable, so to speak, and we could discuss that separately. They had a fear in the Gemara in one place that land might still belong to somebody that we don't even know. And when you harvest from that field, who knows who stole from who among the townspeople, and we come in now and we don't even know who the real owner of this land might be. So when we harvest from it, we make sure that the item harvested gets changed hands numerous times so that it's no longer considered a stolen item. So that if someone harvests hadassim from a field that we don't know who really owns it, we wouldn't ourselves harvest and use because we're worried about this guzzle. We make sure that it changes hands first.
I'll make a note to ask you more about that some other time.
My pleasure. Shalashera. You want a cute story? We don't have time for it, but we'll do it anyway. I was once watching a get proceeding and they grant the ink to the husband who is doing the get, and then with the utensils that are his, he empowers the sofer to write the get for his wife. So it belongs to the husband at the time that it's written. The officiating rabbi is supposed to make sure that those items that the husband acquired are then granted back to the rabbi or to the sof, whatever, so that we can then use them for the next husband that needs to write a get. So I was there, and they had forgotten to ask the husband to grant it back. So he had walked out, and he's long gone, and it wasn't such a great relationship that they were going to call him. And the question was, now what? We have ink that he left behind that we would like to use for the next husband. And are we allowed to? So by combining the concept of Yiyush, that the husband certainly gave up hope, he has no interest in that ink. He walked out. The moment he walked out,
It's gone.
He has no interest in it. But the because it's such a serious thing, called gittin, Jewish divorce, the rabbi was makbid, and he went ahead and had one bystander pick it up, make it his, and then have another person take it from him, and a third person take it from him, so that by the time we were done, it was like, you know, there's no question at this point, it's no longer traceable to the original person. And you're only allowed to do that if it's clearly a permitted case, where the guy gave up.
Right.
I mean, you're not allowed to do that as a manipulation, but good. If it's from items that are supposed to be burnt, so then it's also possible. This is the case of idol worship. Niktam rosho, if the top of the leaf is cut off. So there's a discussion in Halacha, the Shulchan Aruch talks about most of the upper leaves being cut off. The Rama mentions even if the center leaf, one doubled leaf coming up, the tiumis, is cut off, that's already a problem. And that's, we're always very careful with that center leaf because of that. Later on in the Gemara, they're going to discuss the case of Nechlika, if that middle leaf is split. Because you're familiar that the way lulav leaves grow, they're growing doubled. And on one side, you could actually peel them open. It is open. You don't even have to peel it, really. You just have to pressure it open. And on the other side, it's attached. So if that attachment would become detached, that would be a case of Nechlika, which also is a significant discussion. People want that center leaf in particular to still be attached. Nifritzu olav. If the leaves of the lulav are split off. So some learn that this means ne'ekru. They're actually detached. And some learn that it simply means dildalu, that they're very, very droopy to the point that this is well beyond the next case where they're just a little spread out. This is really very drooped out, developed, so that it's no longer even close to the sharvit, to the scepter look that a lulav would normally have. So that's pasul, no good. Nifridu alav, if they're merely spread out, which sometimes happens by a lulav, kasha, that's still okay. Rabbi Yudam Yagdenu Milmaila, you should bind it on top, and that'll hold these spread out leaves in place. The Mishnah mentions a specific case, Tzini Har HaBarzel, a certain type of lulav is ksheros, is acceptable. And then the Mishnah tells us, lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tfachim ukidei lenanea bo kosher. A lulav that has three tfachim and also enough for the wavings, that's going to be kosher. So the way it's brought in Gemara later on and the way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch is that the hadasim and the aravos have to be three tefachim, just under 12 inches for argument's sake. The lulav has to be four tefachim, just under 16 inches, for argument's sake. However, you learn a tefach exactly, but approximately, right, 15 inches, we would look for the lulav to be. Now, when you're measuring the lulav, it's a fascinating concept, the balance of what's the lulav and what are the leaves. Rashi here, for example, says, if the leaves were off, so it's still a lulav, but it's not mehudar. It's not beautiful. In other words, to a certain extent, the leaves are the lulav. If you don't have leaves, you don't have a lulav. But we do know that even if the leaves are off, there's still a shedra, there's a spine. And when a person looks at the lulav carefully, you become adept at identifying what the lulav components are. So when we measure a lulav, we're measuring from the bottom of the lulav, where the leaves start coming out, to a top part of the lulav, where the spine ends, and from there, the leaves continue to go up. But that's no longer the essence of the lulav. The essence of the lulav is the shedra, the spine. So some people will look at you, of course a lulav is 16 inches. How could you get a lulav that's not 16 inches? But if you actually look at some of the lulavim, and it's not necessarily shorter ones, it's just you have to look at how long the leaves are and how long the shedra is, you could end up that there is such a thing as a lulav that's pretty, pretty close to being too short. And that's all part of identifying what the lulav looks like. The top, we pay a lot of attention to. It shouldn't be split. It shouldn't be cut. The general lulav, the difference between leaves and shedra, and also to be aware by lulav leaves that they are doubled over, and to be able to identify whether a doubled over leaf, what's supposed to be doubled over, is either missing anything or split to the point that particularly by that center leaf on top, it could actually invalidate the lulav if it split too much. Yashar koach, thank you for joining.